with Aaron Dowd.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We got all kinds of stuff. No games. You know, Jared, this is one of the days of the year, maybe the only day of the year, where there are no games.
Nothing. No professional, no college,
nothing. Nothing. So it gives us a chance to talk about all kinds of stuff. The Live Tour is on fire. With one more and a really kind of crazy defection yesterday, and then the reports swirling around with who could be the broadcast team. Oh my gosh, I can't wait. We'll tell you who that could be at the end of the show. College football, we're getting close. It's just right around the corner. ESPN's going through a kind of a series this week of betting odds. They started with the Heisman Trophy betting odds on Monday, win totals on Tuesday. Today is conference title odds. So we'll kind of pick all of those apart with what's the current odds. All-Star game last night, American League won their ninth in a row. But more importantly than that, I thought, as far as a TV viewer, it was awesome when you had Smoltzy and Manoah going back and forth about what pitches they were going to throw.
Did you not get enthralled with that?
That was, and then Cortez and Trevino, teammates in the All-Star game, talking back and forth.
Yeah. You know,
being able to get inside the game like that, it was just so unbelievable to be able to – you were like literally in the brains of the battery. And then the first time in the brains of a Hall of Fame pitcher – talking with, you know, that was just fantastic. And baseball, for all the bad that they do, you know, here in the last couple of years, they've done some of the coolest things that have been done in sports. They just can't be consistent about it. I mean, the Field of Dreams game was just awesome. Mm-hmm. and kind of created a buzz. That stuff last night, if you were watching, I mean, it's the things that, as far as I mean, that's the things I want to know. Is, you know, you always kind of think, we always talk about, what they were thinking. They got to tell you last night. That was so cool.
Yeah.
What else, who else could do stuff like that? Other sports. How could that be innovated by TV to get the viewer inside the game? So we can talk about that right off the top. We're going to have a trivia question for another one of these golf passports. I am narrowing it down. It's going to be All-Star Game related. And so I will figure out, right before we go to break this segment, I'll ask the question that will be, winner of a golf passport. Bill Farmer won it yesterday. Still got three more of these things to give away throughout the end of the rest of the week, so I will ask you that question. Also, I'd like to welcome a new sponsor to the show. Going to be the Friday sponsor. It's Scott Garrison at Garrison Financial. It's going to be Financial Fridays with Scott. We're going to get him on the horn to talk about the money part of sports, with obviously the Live Golf stuff's going on, stuff that kind of broke last week. With the Thunder, a new arena, you know, how does that all work, you know, and that kind of thing. So there's all kinds of things to talk about on the financial side, as we're seeing with the conference realignment. Financial things are the driver of sports right now. So great to have Scott aboard for Financial Fridays with Scott. We'll get him, like I said, we'll get him on the horn, and we'll talk about different things that have to do with that in sports. Tell you all about him coming up on every Friday as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We could talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698 if you're going to be outside the listening area. A couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to kadsam.com, or you can download the Paragon Communications app. The app's got it all. It's got the three radio stations. It's got the Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News. Hit the website last night at midnight. It's thepennynews.com there for the website. Big Elk TV, Paragon TV, August 26th. Golly, that is just a little over a month away.
Mm-hmm.
For the kickoff of the Big Elks hosting Altus for game one, trying to stack on seasons like they had last year. So we've got that. We've got Paragon TV with high school football, high school basketball on both as well throughout the high school year. Skinny on Sports Podcast, available iTunes and also KADSAM.com. If you miss the show, you can go back and check out what we had to say, who was the guest or what have you there in either one of those locations. Hello, Jared.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm good. I'm in air conditioning right now, so that's nice.
Yeah.
Had a little issues last night at the house on the hottest day of the year. So working to fix that.
What about how much of the All-Star game did you watch?
A lot, actually. Had it on and sat down and watched the beginning of it. Saw the National League take that lead, and we mentioned the pitching stuff and the mic'd up stuff. That was really cool for me. It's an All-Star game, so you know, it's all in good fun. And then saw the AL take the lead, and then had to address some issues at the house, so I had to walk away from it. But yeah, like you said, the mic'd up pitcher catcher duo was cool. That got me to sit down and turn it up, and just to hear what pitch was coming next. It got me even thinking, okay, what should be thrown here? You know, what's the thought process between pitcher, catcher, and then knowing who's at bat, how to get him out, looking at his tendencies, stuff like that. It was really cool. And you could tell that the broadcasters, because then I started thinking, well, how do you talk to these guys while, you know, they know that don't talk when he's throwing it, you know? And then, because the pitcher's in a zone, but they're still, you kind of feel like they wanted to ask him questions, like, well, what's your thought process here? Or stuff like that. What are you going to go with here? And they were really, and I was glad that the players were really receptive of doing that too. You could tell they weren't put out by it. So it was really neat. And MLB, they got it. I mean, the All-Star game is the best of all All-Star events, in my opinion. I mean, the MLB All-Star game that we've mentioned our quarrels with the NFL, it's a joke. The Pro Bowl game is an absolute joke. The NBA, there's no effort there. It's 152-130 final score. But this game, it was a low-scoring game. You saw a lot of great action on the field, good at-bats, and then the insight to do that stuff with the mic'd-up stuff was a lot of fun. And just to see how the players interact with each other, really, really cool. My only knock on it was the AL uniforms. They look like a bunch of umpires out there.
See?
I wish I'd just wear their uniforms, right?
I was so disappointed when I flipped it on. I'm like, as I mentioned, that was one of the coolest. That's one of my favorite things about it. And that's probably been happening longer than I realize. It did say at least, you know, what team they were on across the sure. chest instead of just like American or National.
Right.
But come on, just wear their that was what's so cool is to see that collection of everybody's yeah. uniforms on the same field like that.
Yeah.
It's golly. And just had a text. One of the coolest parts of the All-Star game is always the intros.
Yeah.
You know, as they introduce everybody. And obviously, if it's in a National League park, the American Leaguers, for the most part, get more of a warm reception
yeah.
than what the others, the home team, gets. And that's another part where you see all those uniforms out there beside each other on up and down both baselines. I thought it was fascinating, the TV of it, when they had those guys mic'd up, you know.
Oh, that's great.
It was funny to watch Manoah, you know, or listen to him talk with Smoltz. And then he was actually mentioning that the catcher was on the same wavelength with him on the pitches that he wanted to throw. Mm-hmm. Smoltz talked him into throwing a back foot slider that he ended up hitting the guy. And he kind of made mention of, I should have stayed with the heater there. But as soon as he did that, he was also asking the broadcast crew, like, what is the scouting report? Because as soon as he hit that guy, here comes Ronald Acuna. He's like, I've never faced him. What's the scouting report on this guy? And it was like, you know, and I think they both said he'll swing at first pitch fastball. So he threw him kind of a higher first pitch fastball, got him to foul it off or whatever, and ended up striking out the side. So that was just fascinating to me to be able to watch that and get inside the game that you're just in baseball. You know that part of baseball there is really like. It lends itself to that. You know, you see those wired up segments on the NFL Network, but it's hard. Everything's moving so fast. And basketball's the same way. You know, it's hard for anything to really be set. It doesn't feel like there's as much. I mean, I know there's thinking and what the quarterback's trying to do and reading defenses, all that, but he doesn't have time to tell you as it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's more of a after the fact. Okay, here's what I saw. Here's what I was thinking. In baseball, you have that time between. You know, the pitcher is the time. He's the one that controls the time, and so it gives him a chance to be able to kind of get enthralled in that. And that was just cool. And then when you had them both going back and forth with Cortez and Trevino in the Yankees later on, I mean, that's, you know, it's like the dialogue was great. It was just great, and kudos to baseball, and like you said, those guys for being willing to do that in a game that really didn't mean anything.
And there's still effort, you know. There, like I thought, with the very first pitch of the game, Ohtani sends it up the middle. I thought, okay, we're gonna get a barrage of hits. The effort from the pitching's not gonna be there. Even the hit looked like a little doinker compared to what Ohtani's able to do. But then him getting picked off, you know, I mean, Kershaw still attempting a pickoff in an all-star game and getting him leaning. And I'm sure, I don't think Ohtani was expecting any kind of a pickoff attempt. I thought, okay, we might actually have a competitive game here. And we did. But it was all still there, all having fun, but there's still a little pride there. Like they still wanted to win. And there's some still competitive at bats and some great play on the field, like I said. So I enjoyed it. And it is the best all-star event on the pro level. It is the best one. Now, like you said, if the MLB can get the rest of the season figured out, even the off-season stuff, because we almost did not start this season on time and all that different stuff. But, you know, they get it right when like with this, you mentioned the Field of Dreams. They're going to do it again. It's going to be really hard to top how they did it last year with the way that game was played and how it ended. But MLB, I mean, they had that opportunity during the COVID situation to be the king of all sports. They kind of fumbled that, but they can be the king of, you know, the boys of summer if they continue to do the all-star event like they have been the last couple of days.
Yeah.
I give it an A+.
Yeah, it was great. And that's the, you know, you got to get people watching and to be able to see those innovations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key for baseball. But at least on some level, they're trying. They're trying out new things. They're trying to be more hip and cool, for whatever that's worth, to get people back to the game. I think it helped immensely, like you said, that there wasn't a big, giant labor fight that pushed people away even further with another half season.
Mm-hmm.
Coming off of COVID that year, and the way that all kind of fell apart at the first because of, you know, the opportunity that baseball squandered to be the only game in town and get people that were starved to actually watch games. It was the billionaires fighting against the millionaires, you know, and it just, I think it was a real positive for that not to carry on and linger to where the season's, you know, starting way late and you're not getting what you expect to get out of baseball. So hopefully this was another step in the right direction with that Field of Dreams game coming up. I mean, it's just the cool part of baseball is the nostalgia, and it's the game within the game. And I thought last night being able to show that was really awesome for the viewer to get an insight into how those guys go about doing what they do. What's another place? What's another spot in sports where something like that could be worthwhile?
With the mic'd up situation?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I had that in my mind last night. I don't think it'd work in the NBA. NFL, you know, we see it in regular season games where players are mic'd up and they replay it. You know, they go and edit it back. But watching it live, you know, that's the key, to see their thought process live. It could work. I mean, if the game was competitive, the Pro Bowl was competitive, and it would work watching a quarterback. I think we've seen it before where they go in, they break down the defense, you know, pre-snap, maybe call an audible and then say in the mic, I'm sending this guy across the middle or something like that. And that's where, I mean, I think that's where it could work, again, if the game was competitive. How about you? Where would you like to see it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the NFL is the first place you think of just because everybody watches the NFL. Mm-hmm. And then when you see those clips that come out of games, like the Chiefs and Bills game there in the divisional round of the playoffs, when Kelce is telling Mahomes and telling Tyreek Hill, hey, the way they've been covering this, if you go here, I can go here and I'll be wide open. And then as they're then you go to the sound of the play, and you can hear Mahomes saying, do it, Kelce, do it. And you know, he hits him up the seam for, 25 yards or what have you,
yeah,
and he kicks the field goal. But that's always after the fact. And I don't know how there's a way to be able to, unless you just pick it up as a viewer during the game, you know, with the Omaha, that's always so famous about Peyton yelling that,
right,
when nobody had any idea what it meant. You know, when you hear do it, Kelce, then you know you're focusing your attention on, but you still don't know. And that was the beauty of last night. They were explaining their theory of attacking a hitter, each and every hitter, with, okay, that went there, he liked that, or you know, that's what baseball. And maybe the one thing that we actually get to see and get to hear a little bit, but it's not on purpose necessarily, is golf. Because the microphones are so close, sometimes you get, and I think this is a problem for me at least with the golf coverage right now, is they have the ability to let you in to that player caddy conversation, about this shot or that shot, and what you actually get an insight into what they're thinking if they'll just shut up and listen. The problem is the guys on the broadcast are too busy wanting to tell you nothing,
right?
Instead of letting you hear what you want to hear from the players and the caddies. So, you know, part of that is just the style of the broadcast and being able to kind of know your role a little bit. Nick Faldo, we don't need your cheeky little English stories while, you know, Phil's trying to figure out how to get out of the trees on 13. You know, that was one of the coolest parts about that shot. Not only did he hit it right between two trees over Race Creek onto the green and two on a par five, but the conversation between Phil and Bones back then to you know, hit the shot.
Should break it down.
That's
now.
Right. And should you do it? Should you not? And all that kind of stuff. You know, Spieth and Michael Grell are great at that. If you'll just let them. Bones, now with JT, you know, they like to – they get more analytical than some. And the truth of it is, there's some of those pairings, the caddy player pairings, that don't do it. Well, that's the time to tell your little story, Nick.
Yeah.
You know, not when we all know what's about to happen and there's going to be a big old conversation and you're going to get an insight into the thought process of what – you know, the best decide to do. So that was really neat last night, and kudos to MLB.
Yeah.
For allowing us in there. The game itself, 3-2. The American League wins again, ninth straight. It was, like you said, competitive game. It is the best All-Star game. And because you can't – guys get out there and they're throwing 98. You know, they're throwing 100. There's no half speed to it.
Yeah. Right.
Sure, they're having fun and all that, but at the end of the day, that is way closer to a Major League Baseball game than anything anybody else tries to do with All-Star Week.
Yeah, yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed it from what I saw. So looking forward to the second half of the season and you know, stuff like that. You know, that's where you're allowed, if you're a broadcaster, to, you know, implement some stuff and see what sticks and what gets rave reviews, and let's see how to transfer that into regular season games and then the postseason. You know, I mean, and that's okay if stuff doesn't work. At least you tried it. You know, I'm not a fan, because we saw this in the College World Series, of the ump cam. It made me seasick every time they put it
right
on, you know, because they're moving around. But, you know, you can go back and you could edit out the good stuff, like, you know, getting a good view of a strikeout or a home run hit or something like that. Last night was kind of funny. He went to the UpCam Live and he took one off the mask.
Right.
and so, I mean, I don't, you know, there's stuff like that I think can be tweaked to be better. But the mic'd up stuff, now, obviously, you're not going to have that in games. You know, I get that. But maybe different camera angles. I think we've seen some cameras, like gopher cams, I guess, what they're called, near bases. You got the mic'd up bases you hear a lot during postseason. It's okay with broadcasters to, I mean, we know firsthand what works, what doesn't work, and if it works, let's stick with it, or let's add to it. So kudos to MLB for trying some stuff last night, and let's see, going into the second half of the season and the postseason, if anything carries over, I guess mainly for Fox. We'll see what they stick with.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting. Because you do see that sometimes when they try things, some of it sticks, some of it doesn't.
Right.
And then, you know, by the time you get to the postseason, you see certain camera angles where you go, huh, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that from the All-Star game.
Yeah.
All right, question time. It's going to be All-Star game related. There are all kinds of – I found a list of 50 kind of factoids about the Major League Baseball All-Star game. And I am going to go with, would you rather inside the park or grand slam?
I think inside the park would be harder to find.
Okay. Only one player in the history of the All-Star game has hit an inside the park home run. Name him. Winner. First one on the text line, 225-9698. Only player in Major League Baseball All-Star game history to hit an inside the park home run. 225-9698. Winner will get one of these golf passports. One attempt at the answer. Incorrect. We got a Yasiel Puig. That is not it.
Remember him?
For a little bit. The only player to hit an inside the park home run in the All-Star game. 225-9698. The winner will get one of these golf passports. Join Bill Farmer as one of the winners. Only player in MLB history to hit an inside-the-park home run in the All-Star game. And no, it's not JoJo Siwa. She did it in the All-Star Celebrity game just this year.
80% of her listeners said, who?
Yeah, I don't know who that is either.
But if you're a girl dad, you know exactly who that is.
Yeah, that'd be a reason why I don't know. 225-9698. Who's the only player to hit a inside the park home run in the All-Star game? All right, Jared, college football. I love one of the innovations that we've seen over the past, you know, handful of years, I guess, is the fact that the networks, ESPN specifically when it comes to college football, has really kind of wrapped their arms around the fact that people are going to bet, and it's becoming legal in a whole bunch more states. And so they kind of integrate the gambling part of college football in a lot more than they ever did.
Right.
You know, you actually, to the point of, you see the lines on the screen as it scrolls across. We had Ricky Henderson as a guest. That's also not right. Along the right track though, everybody's thinking of Fast Guys, and they're going to be, somebody's going to finally think of him. Anyhow, so I love the aspect of that, where, you know, you get an idea of what upsets really are, as opposed to some number on the left of their name,
sure,
voted by a bunch of people. What do the real guys that do it for a living as far as Vegas go? You know, that to me is more what an upset is versus just a couple of numbers by somebody's name. So this week ESPN's kind of been through a series. They started with Heisman on Monday, win totals for the year on Tuesday, conference title projections today. I think they've got some week zero and week one games coming up tomorrow, and then national title odds coming up on Friday. So let's go back to let's just start with the way they did it on Monday with the Heisman Trophy. There are two guys that are way, way ahead, or with the best odds, than anybody else. Not surprisingly, it's Bryce Young, the defending Heisman Trophy winner, and also C.J. Stroud, quarterback at Ohio State. Currently, Stroud is the betting favorite at plus 200. Bryce Young is plus 350, and then you got to go all the way down to plus 800 to find USC's Caleb Williams. If I gave you Young, Stroud, or the field, which way would you go?
One of the two. Yeah. I don't think anyone after those two stand out because of the uncertainty of Caleb Williams at USC. We know what Caleb Williams can do, but there is still uncertainty there with, you know, new scenery. And, you know, is USC still USC? You know, we expect the offense to be better under Lincoln Riley. But, you know, does Caleb Williams get better against, you know, the umbrella defense that has proven to maybe be his kryptonite? But those two guys, we know what they can do. It's more stable because they're at the same school, same offense, more or less. One guy's already won the Heisman. other guys, I'm probably the national favorite to win the title. So I'll take one of those two guys other than the field.
Yeah, the one thing about that I would say, I don't know, is are you only really getting C.J. Stroud? And the reason I say that is back-to-back, Archie Griffin, the only one that's ever won it twice. And I think we've seen some guys, Lamar Jackson being one of them, Tebow maybe even being another, that the expectations for them in the seasons after they've won it are so unrealistic that it feels like they get knocked down for performances that aren't even that bad. And I wonder how that's going to work out for Bryce Young. Can he possibly live up to what the expectations are going to be in the minds of the voters for a season that he has to have in order to win it twice?
Right.
So that would be the only – because it feels like it's going to be one of those two.
There should be an embargo of opinions on Heisman favorites until after, like, five games.
Yeah. I mean –
because – It should not be, you know, because you'll see it every year. You'll see a Heisman rate or a Heisman favorites top two or three. The moment they have a bad game in their first two or three games, the media immediately and the opinion of them immediately writes them off. Where then they will have finished a season on a streaker, you know, they're like, oh man, you know, but there's always like, well, he struggled against in that non-conference game against Appalachian State. Remember that game, you know, and they're like, come on, pump the brakes. Look at the overall product. So there should be like an embargo. So, but you're right, Bryce Young's going to have that pressure as soon as he throws his first pick. Everyone's going to put their hands up and go, well, oh, we can't do it again.
I think we saw it with Trevor Lawrence. After that great national title leading freshman season came out and he didn't play great his first couple games and he was done. And then you get to the end, you're going, well, wait a minute. Are we sure Trevor Lawrence wasn't the best player this whole time?
Yeah.
I mean,
he had the numbers.
That's right.
Yeah.
It just gets – and that's what I'm afraid of if you're taking just those two and Bryce Young has just – a struggle like that this year is going to matter more than it did last year because he's expected to be the Heisman Trophy winner now. Before, he was just a great player on a great team.
Yeah.
But now he's got that moniker to live up to – for this season. That would be why I would have a hard time, you know, with him. But, you know,
well,
Stroud.
Let me turn it around and ask you, outside of those top two guys, who's your maybe dark horse?
It's an interesting question because I've got a bunch of these numbers written down. I think – I'm trying to remember if we've ever seen – okay, we always talked about, like, Boise back in the BCS days. Boise almost had to have like two or three seasons in a row. For sure, one great one, and then the next year they get some more love, and then maybe that third one, they actually have a chance to be in that title game, right? Mm-hmm. If they can string them, play some teams, da-da-da. I feel like that's a little bit of the same way with defenders.
Huh, yeah.
And what we saw from Will Anderson last year, most people thought he was the best player in the country.
Yeah.
Now he's back. And he's down there at plus 33, plus 3,300. So 33-1 are his odds. I wonder if he doesn't have a better chance on that team because he's not the defending champion, but we all know they're going to be good. You know, that's the thing
My
about –
My only problem with that is the whole cancel out theory.
Right, but
you know what I mean.
I agree,
you
but
got two Heisman contenders on one team.
But if you, the reason why I think maybe he doesn't get canceled as much as some others would have, is because of the guy that would take his votes already won one.
Yeah.
So do the voters instead of a normal year where it's like, oh yeah, these two kind of split the votes and somebody else won, him already Bryce Young already being a Heisman Trophy winner, if Anderson is as dominant as he appears he's going to be. I wonder if that's not a guy that's worth some money way back there. See, like Smith and Jigba is right there with him, receiver from Ohio State. I wouldn't touch that at all because of what you just said. Between him and Stroud, Travion Henderson, the running back, is right below these guys at plus 4,000. It's hard. It'd be hard to see the receiver or the running back, if they're as explosive as we all think they're going to be, it'd be hard to see the receiver or the running back getting the love over the quarterback.
I can't pull up the odds here. I found the link. It just keeps timing out. Where is Clemson's DJ Ukulele?
Now, he's the guy that I picked to win it last year, which was a horrific pick.
Sure.
Plus 2,500. Okay. So he was the fifth favorite.
Well, I think I'm going to peg him as my dark horse because I think Clemson's going to have a bounce-back year despite all the turnover on the coaching staff. He's still a good quarterback, was recruited at a high level. I think now he settles in, he's going to be fine. If we're picking dark horses, that's the guy I'm looking at.
Yeah, it depends on how deep you want to go into the dark horse. Mm-hmm. You know, the national championship winning quarterback is plus 12,500 to one. Stetson Bennett.
Yeah. Oh, that guy. Yeah.
It's never a bad thing to take the best quarterback on one of the top three or four
teams.
That's
a good point.
And we're getting all that back. I mean, Young and Stroud are plus 200 and plus 350. Bennett's clear down at plus 12,500. Here's another guy that I wrote down that could be interesting. Will Levis, quarterback, Kentucky. He's plus 6,600. But when you come over here and we'll look at the odds to win the conference, we'll also look at over-unders. Kentucky's in that 8.5 range. So, you know, we talked about them when we were talking about conferences a couple weeks ago. You know, they get Georgia at home. They have to go to Florida, and there's another one that they're going to be on the road for. But if it's a magical season there in Lexington, plus 6,600 is a big number. I'm sure everybody out there is wondering, okay, where are the two in-state guys? Dylan Gabriel, plus 3,300 at 33-1. Spencer Sanders, plus 8,000. That seems ridiculously too high.
For Gabriel?
No, for Sanders.
Oh, for Sanders?
That's crazy. I mean, I thought he would be more in... Anyhow, that if you're taking a flyer on somebody, that a team should be good and a guy that is going to get a whole bunch of love for it, that could be,
yeah,
you know, a guy that fits that bill. Interesting that there's two Texas guys in the top seven.
Bijan
Robinson's plus 2,000, which is the fourth best odds. And then at sixth, I guess two in the top six, Ewers at plus 2,800. But like we talked about the other day with Texas, or I guess it was yesterday, you know, springboards. People are – you just get a sense that the media folks all around the country are just dying to prop some of these guys up because Texas has been down for so long.
Right.
You know, and if it's yours, I mean, you can almost hear the story, right? Texas floundered for a decade in the desert of college football because they didn't have a quarterback since Colt McCoy, and now they finally got one, and boom, here they are, back in national prominence. And if that happens, they'll be in the running. One of those two guys will.
Yeah.
Here's a question from a couple of different guys on the text line. Do you have to be in the running for a playoff spot or national title to win the Heisman anymore?
In these days, I say yes. In these, because it is typically, it's you look at the best team, best player on best team. So yeah, I would say yes. And it's a shame. I don't think it should be like that. I think it should be who is the best player all year, but it really narrows down when you get to mid-November into December, the championship games. You know, you start hearing that talk of everyone's, again, opinion and writers, who their top five, four, three Heisman candidates are, and all of a sudden it's somewhere set in stone that these are the top three guys. And those guys are usually playing for conference titles to get into the playoff. So, yes, don't agree with it, but it is.
Yeah, when you look over the last, 25 years, very few of these guys that won it weren't in serious consideration for either the playoff spot or the BCS game.
Sure.
You know, Lamar Jackson in 2016 from Louisville, he was just that electric. Mm-hmm. You know, and they were on the periphery, I guess, but not right in the mix. Johnny Manziel, 2012, They weren't a team that was fighting to be in the top two. The year before, RG3, I think they were 9-3. But outside of those guys, you got to go back to maybe Carson Palmer in 2002. USC still made a BCS bowl, but they weren't. You know, that would be almost like a playoff spot now, in consideration for a playoff spot.
Yeah.
You know, and so they weren't going to play in the big game. But they were right. They were in one of the best, you know, 7 or 8. But yeah, those numbers, you know, it almost there's a line of demarcation almost when you look back through here at the year 2000. That's when Chris Winkie won. Then it goes to Crouch. You know, before that, Ron Dayne, Wisconsin was nowhere near a national title.
No.
Ricky Williams of Texas, nowhere near a national title. You know, Rashawn Salaam of Colorado, Ty Detmer. You know, those guys, you know, those names throughout there, mm-hmm. where it was more, you know, Barry Sanders, Andre Ware, all those guys were nowhere near the best player on the best team. They were just the best player.
Right.
And it feels like once the BCS came into existence, then all of a sudden that kind of changed.
Yeah.
Because in order to be able to be considered, you had to have your team in consideration for those spots.
Right. Yeah.
All right, win totals. Yeah, that's why it sucks now. I don't disagree with that.
I don't agree with it because I think there were better deserving players in the past since 2000 and beyond. None come to mind right now. I'd have to look it up. But there were some that were like, man. Because my definition of the Heisman was best player in the country. And then sometimes, like, okay, if you took that guy off that team, where would that team be? And a lot of that would, you know, you hate that it's kind of turning into a popularity contest where it should be about the best player in the country. And you know, there's a fine line between it and stuff. But
in most years, it's a quarterback contest.
Yeah, that too.
I mean, not only do you have to be one of the best players on the best team, you almost got to be one of the best quarterbacks on the best team.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, you have to have an unbelievable year, or none of the quarterbacks have great years. That's kind of the balance, right? DeVonta Smith was incredible, and he also got the benefit of Waddle getting hurt. You know, so then there was that narrative out there that to push him along. You know, Derrick Henry was in a year. Who was? It's kind of one of those. Okay, who do we don't really have anybody to give it to, so we can give it to Derrick Henry. You know?
Yeah.
And then Mark Ingram was a little bit the same way back in 09. Are we really going to give it to Sue? Or we can't give it to a defensive guy? Da, da, da.
Right.
Okay, Mark Ingram is a running back on the team.
So that's a great example. I thought Sue should have won.
That's right.
That's a great example. If you took him off Nebraska, they're nothing.
That's right.
How often can you say that about a defensive lineman? Is the difference between a great season, you know, a really good team and a mediocre team.
That shows you how good he was.
Yes. And that's why he should have won the Heisman.
Yeah, and so that's we'll see if Will Anderson can be the guy for me. Win totals. I looked this up for this apparently from yesterday. So Alabama, far and away the highest win total, 11.5. And these are only regular season win totals. So 12 games encompasses these. So the question on Alabama is: you either believe they're going to go over, or you either believe they're going to go undefeated, or you believe they're going to lose one. That's the choice with them at 11.5. Three teams at 10.5. Who do you think they are?
Georgia?
Yes.
You said three?
Three.
Ohio State?
Yes.
Georgia, Ohio State, dare I say Clemson?
Yes, okay. That's it. That's exactly it. So those teams have one mulligan. I've seen places that have Ohio State and Georgia at 11. So it's a push if they lose. But this had 10.5. So, man, it's hard to imagine Ohio State losing 2, right?
Very.
So that seems like 11 is kind of one of those, okay, we may push. 10.5 you feel pretty good about. Four teams at 9.5. See if you can name them.
This is where I'd go with OU.
Yep.
Texas?
Nope.
SC? OUSC. Let me ask a question. Is the one of the other schools in the Pac-12?
Nope.
Okay.
You got a Big Ten and a...
Notre Dame.
I didn't know how I was going to say that without giving it away.
Notre Dame.
And a Big Ten.
And Michigan?
That's right.
Okay.
Let's talk about OU.
I feel good about myself. This without even,
that's pretty good.
I can't get the links to work. I know exactly where you're looking.
Yeah,
at I
didn't
can't get them to work.
I had to find the numbers elsewhere.
Okay.
Because the links wouldn't go back. OU at 9.5. I think that's a really fair number.
Sure it is.
Because last year 11-2, but they won more games by a touchdown or less than anybody in the country. And if that number just kind of regresses toward the mean, you could see a 9-3 so easy. You know, mm-hmm. stub your toe in Lincoln, can't get it done in the Cotton Bowl, then you got to win the rest in order to go over that 9.5. So
there's probably you got a lot of new faces on the field, a lot of new starters on the field that was made aware during the press conference or media days last week by Venables. You got new coaching staff, so there's gonna be growing pains there. This feels like 99 again, right?
Which was what, 6-6 or 6-5, and then lost in the bowl, 7-4, something like that.
Lost in the bowl, 7-5 final. I'm not saying they're going to go 7-5, but it just feels like, okay, let's get acclimated with these new guys, new coaching staff. It just feels like good things are coming, but I mean, I'm a realist here. I'm not expecting.
Do you be more inclined to hit the under than the over at 9.5?
Almost. I'd be very happy with the.
A 10-2.
Well, obviously, because that means you're playing for a conference title.
Probably does. The 8.5s. You mentioned a bunch of those names already. I think you were thinking Oregon with the other Pac-12.
I was split between Oregon and Utah.
But they're both there at 8.5.
Okay.
At 8.5.
Okay. Well,
Wisconsin, A&M, Texas, Pitt, Penn State, OSU, Miami, Kentucky, North Carolina State, and then some smaller schools: App State, BYU, and Fresno. 8.5 for OSU. Have to come to Norman and have to go to Baylor. And then here we go. We've got a winner for the question. It doesn't matter. Everybody's going to look
it up.
Doesn't
matter how many times you answer. Yeah. Just, as long as you get one of them right.
Dakota's the Jeff of our show. So Dakota is the winner of the golf passport.
And
Ichiro Suzuki was the answer to the guy that the only guy in Major League Baseball history to hit an inside the park home run in the All-Star game.
Had to think about fast guys. That's a fast guy.
All right, so we have what was our OSU
8.5? You said
I got Arizona State as their marquee non-conference game, but that's in Stillwater.
Yeah, that should be okay.
To Norman, to Waco.
Tough.
Texas at home. They've won 8 out of the last 12 against UT. 8.5.
When in the season is that?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me look it up.
I mean, is it before Dallas, after Dallas for Texas?
I think it's after.
Okay. Because you know how that works. I mean, they could lose the Alabama, lose the OU, and all of a sudden they're on a slide again. So what I'm saying is OSU could catch them at the right time.
So it's,
or at the wrong time if they win those games.
So it's the 22nd, so 2 weeks.
2 weeks after?
After. Yeah, OSU's schedule, they start at home. They got the first three at home, Arizona State, Central Michigan, and Arkansas Pine Bluff. Then they go to Baylor. They have to go to TCU, Kansas State, and Oklahoma.
They open conference play with Baylor?
Uh-huh. Woo. At Baylor. Texas is at home. Iowa State's at home. West Virginia at home. So 8-4 is under. 9-3 is over.
I'll go 9-3.
I think it's an over, too. A 9-3,
but the road games are tough. The Waco, Norman,
Manhattan,
man, they're one of my dark horse Big 12 teams. The road games are tough, and there's going to be slip ups there, not because of the offense, but the defense. That defense is we'll see what they got, but yeah, I'll take 9 wins.
I think it's an over. All right, tell you what, we'll save the conference title odds for tomorrow and then look at some week one odds as well.
Cool.
Pick some games. We're getting close. Congratulations to Dakota, winner of today's golf passport giveaway.
You have to use it today. You have to go golf today.
No, you had to wind back and use it yesterday. Wrapping it up here on a Wednesday with some LIV golf. Reports surfacing everywhere, and I think it was actually confirmed this morning, that the newest member of the LIV golf tour is going to be the guy that was supposed to captain the Ryder Cup team for Europe, and that's Henrik Stenson. So another kind of a coup here for LIV Golf to wrestle away the Ryder Cup captain for Europe. They've stripped him of the captaincy over this move. And, you know, this is, to me, the first guy where it's like, okay, come on now. The buzzwords are growing the game and all that. How in the world does Henrik Stenson grow the tour, grow the game of golf? This is clearly just they threw cash at the Ryder Cup captain to try to show that, hey, LIV Golf is cooler than the Ryder Cup. And it worked. That's what's crazy. It worked. Your thoughts?
I think we're going to see a lot of, are we calling them defectors?
I guess that's what we need to call them.
We're going to see a lot of it because the last major has been played.
Correct.
And we're going to see a lot of them jump over thinking, okay, I'm going to go over here, and then by the time next April rolls around, something could be settled where we can do both. So I'm going to go make all this money now. And I mean, it's a win-win because they can make all this money now. And then if they're not allowed back to play at Augusta or play, you're like, oh, well, I'm going to the bank with this, so I'm good with it. But, yeah, we're going to see a lot of golfers go over, a lot of guys from PGA, a lot of guys from Europe go over to the LIV to make that money.
Yeah, that I think two things are in play here. One, the major season is over. And two, at the end of August, when the playoffs are over, you know, you still got those FedEx Cup playoffs that those guys can earn bukus of money.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as that is done, and there's still events, you know, that's why the PGA Tour came out with that series to pay these guys, because the LIV events, there's a bunch of them after that. And that's that sweet spot for guys that are going to make the playoffs, do the playoffs, and then, oh, now I can go and earn all that money. And the thing is, who could turn it down? Especially it's one thing for Tiger Woods to turn it down. He's got money that he'll never be able, his family will never be able to spend. So, you know, he can kind of have that principle of, I'm a PGA Tour guy. You know, like a guy like Pat Perez who's struggled around and, you know, he's made a bunch of money to us. But with what he's had to do, and you know, it is a mental grind when you don't know where you're going to be playing and do you have status and all that kind of stuff. It makes sense. Oh, they're going to give me $50 million just to show up, see you, bye.
Yeah,
that's an easy choice. And so that those are the guys. I mean, I just saw a name that everybody around here knows that is suspected to be the next guy. Charles Howell III. He fits that bill.
Yeah.
He's won like three times. He's made $40-something million on tour. And instead of having to be gone all the time and week after week trying to, you know, grind it out and backdoor top tens the way he has and made tons of money and had a career that I think people would consider a little bit disappointing when it comes to wins, but he's been ultra successful when it comes to money. He makes perfect sense for that. It's like almost like an early senior tour for some of these guys that are in their early to mid 40s, they see the writing on the wall that, you know what, I can compete every now and then, but not really. They're going to give me how much?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What? Did you add?
Yeah.
Did you add two extra zeros there, or? Huh. Yeah. Okay. I'll be there.
Right.
What's even more interesting to me, at least right now, than the players, is the broadcasters. Widely reported that David Faraday is gone, leaving NBC to do the LIV Golf. And then yesterday, which totally entertaining for me. Faraday's always been entertaining. Then yesterday, a name out of the blue surfaced. Did you see who it was?
It's Charles.
Charles Barkley.
Yeah. I saw that.
Charles Barkley.
Would he leave TNT?
You know, there was some...
Such a successful show.
The most successful studio show of all time.
Yes.
In professional sports, the only one that can rival it, to me, is Game Day.
Right.
And I realize that's not really a studio show anymore, but whatever. It's the same concept.
Right.
Of course he would. Depending on the money. I mean, he makes $10 million a year from Turner, with the number being bandied about. Okay, what if they give him 75 just to do it? Of course he's gone.
Yeah.
It's going to be a sad deal for TNT. It's going to be a sad deal for Inside the NBA because of how great that show has been. But at the same time, if you're Charles, you're getting up there in age, you can do this for a couple of years and then be done and have an extra $50 million in my pocket? Of course you're doing it. Of course you are.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to be interested in is once we start to see certain guys that the quote-unquote legacy media likes and agrees with on certain topics start to be the defectors, will the sharp-edged comments, articles, will those start to kind of fade away?
It's going to have to start somewhere with somebody to do it. I don't know who. I liked how they approached it last weekend, called the other, what do they call it? They would not name,
mm-hmm.
You know, and there were comments and kind of jabs at it.
And didn't it seem like the coverage of those guys was pretty pretty light?
Yeah.
I mean, Dustin Johnson on Saturday was in the top four.
I noticed that.
And you never even really saw him.
I noticed that.
Unless he screwed up.
I noticed that.
Like Phil the first 2 days on network coverage. You never saw Phil until he like three putted from 4 feet. Then it was like, oh, there's Phil.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. That's their prerogative.
Right. And when they would, you know, when Young was obviously a contender, you know, he has a beard, you know. And again, when I just have it on, I look over and I see a guy golfing with a beard.
I think it was DJ.
Oh, is that DJ? No, not. It's that young guy again. I get it. He's ahead of him. But then you'd see where Johnson was. Like, how come he's not getting that? That makes good sense. Yeah.
Yeah. It. I don't know if everyone was just
a little petty.
If you're looking into it too much or if it was really happening. Felt like it was really happening. I mean, I know it happened.
Well, if you're the guy in the broadcast truck and you're going, okay, we're going to take a putt over here, and you got like three options, and, well, not that guy. He's over. Let's go over this guy. You know, when it's a quick decision, mm-hmm. It could be kind of like
subconscious.
Subconsciously. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Subconscious decision. Like, no, let's go over this guy. Because maybe he even has some pressure.
It seemed like it.
Yeah,
and there's no way they can tell me, and that I will believe them being the RNA, that they didn't totally mess with them on tee times. They didn't allow any of them to come in and speak to the media pre-tournament. Their tee times were awful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the pairings were kind of those guys together. You know, I thought it was fairly obvious that they were kind of taking jabs at the LIV Golf guys, and you know what? That's their prerogative. They're running their own tournament, and you know NBC can do whatever they want with the broadcast. But I at least to my biased mind, thinking about how they were going to handle it, it certainly seemed like that was the route they took.
Yes.
And will that continue to get worse? But, I mean, how much fun, just from a fun standpoint, and I think this is part of the thing that LIV Golf is trying to do, how much fun would it be to listen to Faraday and Barkley on a golf broadcast?
That would be fun. That would be a lot of fun.
Compared to what we get on a weekly basis on network golf coverage?
Yeah.
Man, a breath of fresh air. And without as many sponsors, you're not getting near the amount of commercials, or commercials at all, essentially. So that just gives them more time on air to go back and forth. just from a viewership standpoint, taking out all the other stuff, it's kind of exciting, and it seems like it could be a whole bunch of fun.
Right. I agree.
With those guys on the broadcast together.
I agree.
There's still not any – I don't know that there's anybody playing that makes you must-watch TV, but maybe that's the route they're going now is the broadcast be must-watch broadcast TV. It's interesting. We'll see. But their next tournament's next week. Still got like three openings. Who will fill those? Remains to be seen. Everybody have a great Wednesday. Be back tomorrow. Stay safe out there. Stay cool.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.